This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a fantastic Monday. And we're going to get into a little bit more history as it pertains to our modern conflict today, or potential modern conflict. Then we're switching gears to some emails, domestic issues, move off of this stuff. But you know what time it is. It is the start of the second hour on Monday. And so we are going to do what we always do at this time, and that is Medal of Honor Monday, where we take a Medal of Honor citation, the write-up on what these heroes did, and we read it. And we do take recommendations. On top of your love, hate, and death threats, you can send recommendations if there are ones you like or have a relation to Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. This email says, Jesse, may I recommend you read Sergeant Alvin C. York's Medal of Honor citation for Medal of Honor Monday? I wrote a paper on him for a homeschool project. I thought it would be a good one to read. Also, a little background on Sergeant York, that he was raised in Tennessee, and he was also a pretty big guy. He was also a very adept sharpshooter. And that's from an 11-year-old named Isaac. I love that name, by the way. Editor/dad's note. I love this. Wrote a paper is an understatement. He and his classmates each studied a person from U.S. history, wrote a paper on them, then dressed in character as that person to give a short speech on that person's life in front of the community audience, as well as being available to answer further questions after. Says his name is Brian, father of five boys. Says I can use their names. So, without further ado, let's pay our respects to Alvin Colium York, Alvin C. York. Everyone's heard of Alvin York. Now, I'm going to warn you beforehand, this Medal of Honor citation is criminally short. That's because it's pre-World War II. Remember, the Medal of Honor citations picked up in World War II. They got more descriptive. It got way better. That's why most of ours are World War II and beyond. It's not that the heroism was any different. They just didn't spend a lot of time on them. So because of the brevity, how about that word, Chris? You can't use that word. Because of the brevity of this Medal of Honor citation, I will expand on it a little bit after I get done reading it. I'm just going to read it verbatim. So this is Alvin Colium York, U.S. Army, born in Fentress County, Tennessee. And this is obviously from World War I.
Ready? Aim.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
After his platoon had suffered heavy casualties and three other non-commissioned officers had become casualties, Corporal York assumed command. Fearlessly leading seven men, he charged with great daring a machine gun nest, which was pouring deadly and incessant fire upon his platoon. In his heroic feat, the machine gun nest was taken, together with four officers and 128 men and several guns. And I'm not even kidding. That's it. That's it for the citation. So let's expand on this just a touch, shall we? Alvin York grew up, big family, tons of kids. And it was one of those big families back in the day where everybody had to go to work. Everyone worked. They were a hard-working Tennessee family, as there are many today. Now, Alvin York, in his youth, was a huge drinker and fighter. He was physically a big dude anyway, but he had a real alcohol problem and a very violent man. And it's just, honestly, I realized they made a movie about it back in the day. I think it was Gary Cooper who starred in it, but they should do a more modern version of it because the story arc here is amazing. He's this drinker and this fighter. Gives his life to Christ. Sets aside all those ways. No, I'm not. I'm done with all that now. The drinking, the fighting, I'm done with all that. World War I comes. He had to enter selective service. This was not an option back then. And he said on his paperwork, he said, I don't want to fight. I mean, he signed up the way he was supposed to, but he said, no fighting for me. I don't believe I'm supposed to hurt anybody. I think that's against the teachings of the Bible. So that was kind of how it went. Then Alvin York gets called into his command, essentially his commanders. I won't go into the details of it. And his commanders were all Christian men. And they were telling him, hey, Alvin, look, you forgot about this verse and this verse and this verse and this verse. Like, you can go be a warrior. That's acceptable. It's not committing murder. Whatever they said, I wasn't there. Whatever they said, Alvin York walked out of there and was totally okay with going to kill people. Now, the deal was, there was this line in Germany known as the Hindenburg Line. He was a German general, doesn't matter, but the Hindenburg Line. This line was a defensive line. And there is a hill. You can actually go look at this hill. I believe Hill 223. I don't know why I remember that. Chris, look that up and see if I'm right about that. I believe it was Hill 223. It doesn't matter the number, but it was Hill 223? In your stupid face, Chris. All right, Hill 223 was, you can go look it up right now. It's a hill that was overlooking flat ground. It's where you would want to be if you were dug in on the defense. The Germans were. The Americans, York was part of this group, were given the task of infiltrating, basically. Get behind those lines and stop this machine gun nest. Stop it. It's a very deadly job, a very dangerous job. And a lot of Americans died in the doing of this. I thought it would probably be appropriate to read York's comments on what he did. It's just so amazing what he did. Here's what he said, quote, "The Germans got us, and they got us right smart. They just stopped us dead in our tracks. Their machine guns were up there on the heights, overlooking us and well hidden, and we couldn't tell for certain where the terrible heavy fire was coming from. And I'm telling you, they were shooting straight. Our boys just went down like the long grass before the mowing machine at home. Our attack just faded out, and there we were, lying down about halfway across the valley, and those German machine guns and big shells getting us hard. And those machine guns were spitting fire and cutting down the undergrowth around me something awful. And the Germans were yelling orders. You never heard such a racket in all your life. I didn't have time to dodge behind a tree or dive into a bush. As soon as the machine guns opened fire on me, I began to exchange shots with them. There were over 30 of them in continuous action, and all I could do, what, I love this, and all I could do was touch the Germans off just as fast as I could. I was sharpshooting. All the time I kept yelling at them to come down. I didn't want to kill any more than I had to, but it was they or I, and I was giving them the best I had." And he did. And I love that little excerpt because when you look at the picture of the hill, Hill 223, and you picture what it would be like to be halfway towards that hill, halfway across that open ground with machine gun nests dumping on you, it's amazing anybody lived. It's amazing anyone that, and to charge and just start mowing through people, amazing. But that's the story of York, Sergeant York, he's famously known as. But he was only a corporal at the time. He got promoted to sergeant immediately afterwards. That happens when you happen to capture half the German army. But that is the actual story of Sergeant York, World War I. How about that? And remember this. This is nothing against city boys or city folks at all. Because as I've told you many times before, I love the city. I love the country. I love it all. I enjoy all aspects of it. I like going to New York City, which we'll get to in a little bit. I like being in Montana. I like it. But rural boys make the best troops. I know it's not universal, so don't email me. I'm from New York, and I don't care. In general, rural boys make the best troops because they grow up doing things that you will have to do as a soldier later on, but that's just part of their life, and so there's not as big of an adjustment period, being outdoors. For someone like me, I grew up hunting and fishing, hiking. We were always outside, always doing that stuff. So when I got to the Marine Corps, being outside was not a big deal. I mean, it's not like I enjoyed it when it's 125 degrees out, but you get it. There are going to be bugs. You're going to sleep on the hard ground. You got it. There's less of an adjustment period when it comes to shooting. It really can't be discounted. Alvin York grew up hunting, and not just for funsies. He had to feed his family on that. Alvin York grew up shooting. He was a shooter. So, a bunch of Germans are shooting at you from the hills. He said, and then if you look at the valley, there's no room to hide. There was no other choice. You grab the weapon and kill them before they kill you, or you're going to die. Those guys just tend to make really, really, really good soldiers. Can you imagine if he'd been on Chalk, Bill? Think about that. Think about the amount of testosterone York already had. If he had been taking a male vitality stack from Chalk for just 3 months before that, would he have? He may have won the war that day. He may have just taken all those prisoners, but he would have so much energy because of his T levels and so much focus. He may have just kept going and captured the entire German army. In fact, I think he would have. He may have even been bulletproof. Results may vary. I wouldn't bank on that. But you can bank on a 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days, so that's something. Do you want to be like Alvin York without having to murder a bunch of people? Go to chalk.com and get yourself a male vitality stack or a female vitality stack. Or, let me make it easier, why don't you call them? The Dimes are standing by, waiting by the phone, fellas. 50-CHOQ, C-H-O-Q, 50-CHOQ-3000. 50-CHOQ-3000. Just tell them Jesse sent you. You could even text that number, all right? All right. Let's touch on one more historical thing that may make you squirm a little in your chair. Next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. All right, let's talk about something else historical before we move on to other things, other news of the day, things like that. You see, we already talked earlier about Trump wanting to be done with this whole Iran-Israel thing. He's made several public comments today to that effect as well. Hey, I'm now calling for peace. He put out some long statement I'm not going to read about Iran. He's like, yeah, we knew they were coming. They gave us a heads up. Appreciate the heads up. They didn't do any damage. Hopefully Iran is now ready for peace. We now know Trump is talking to Netanyahu. He's like, hey, time for peace. Let's make a deal now. Let's make some peace. Donald Trump wants to be done. Drop the bombs on the nuclear facilities and walk away. All right. Let's talk about World War I again, but in a different way. Just stay with me. Let's talk about World War I again. How did we end up in that war? Remember, I've been studying politics since I got out of the Marine Corps, so that's probably 20 years now, two decades. I've seen a lot of poll numbers. President, Congress, polling issues, polling men, polling women, all kinds of poll numbers. I've never, ever seen anything poll at 97%. You know what percentage of America wanted us to stay out of World War I while it was going on? 97%. That's the entire country. All right, let's just call it 100. I don't know who those other 3% freaks are. That was the whole country. But we got into it. Okay? Well, I want you to picture this scenario. I want you to picture this scenario. You're out with your buddy. You're at a bar. Couple dudes, not you two, couple dudes square off. They want to get in a fight with each other. Not with you two. They're getting ready to fight with each other. You don't want to get in the conflict. Your buddy wants to jump in. He wants to fight too. Now, he knows you don't want to fight. He's aware of that. He's going to respect your wishes and he's going to say, man, I'm not going to touch anybody. I'm not going to throw a single punch. But I'll defend myself. Obviously, I have no choice, but I'll defend myself. And so when the other two guys square off and start fighting, your buddy steps up, starts screaming names at them when all their blood's up, their adrenaline's up. Hey, wuss, you suck! Now, your buddy ends up getting hit. Punch is thrown. Well, now he's in a fight, and now you're in a fight. Let me ask you something. Why are you in a fight now? You didn't want to. Your buddy said you didn't want to, and your buddy didn't throw a punch. Your buddy created the circumstances that were going to guarantee that you were going to be trapped into a fight. In World War I, America did not want to get into it. Yet Woodrow Wilson, our president at the time, very much did want to get into it. We know that now. Wanted to get into it bad. He wanted to, you know, march the armies forward like all these world leaders want to do for the most part. The sinking of the Lusitania is one of the most famous reasons we got into World War I, along with the Zimmermann telegram. That's a telegram Germany had sent to Mexico telling them to attack us. But we'll focus on the sinking of the Lusitania for right now. We weren't involved in World War I. America didn't want to be involved in World War I. But you know what we were doing? Loading munitions onto essentially cruise ships. To think of a Carnival cruise ship, a Norwegian cruise ship. Think about America loading a bunch of artillery shells onto one of those, because that's basically what we did, and sending it over to Britain. Artillery shells, American artillery shells, that were going to be used to kill Germany. Germans, they were not fools. And stopping your enemy from importing munitions is an important part of fighting a war if you can cut off their supply lines. Eventually, Germany, they bring down that ship. Who got us into World War I? How did we end up in World War I? Donald Trump wants to be done with this. I'm going to give him credit. I think he deserves all the credit in the world for that. Take out the nuclear facilities. Hey, we're done. I got that. How many different entities want something different? I brought up the intelligence services. What do you think they could do? Could they do the version of, you know, one brother harassing another brother, where he's just holding his finger an inch from his brother's face saying, "I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you"? Could they do something like that? They could. What about Israel? Israel, as we discussed, is uniquely invested and understandably invested in the takeout of this entire regime. They're not interested in some sort of a peace deal. For them, they don't think that's even possible with the Ayatollah, and they're probably right about that. They're not interested in some kind of a deal. It's what Trump's after now. What can they do? What will they do? I'm worried. I put it that way. I understand what Trump wants. I applaud Trump for what he wants. But we have created a situation where we're almost baiting them to beg us to get in. And you can see how that could go bad quickly. Anyway, let's move on past that, because I want to discuss our country domestically. In fact, it's going to sound related to that, but it's not. We didn't tell Democrats before we bombed Iran. How do you feel about that? I have emotions that are complicated. I'll explain in a minute.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, reminding you, you can email us love, hate, death threats, whatever you would like, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Now, let's discuss something more important for you, for me, our domestic situation here as a country. Because this little tidbit came out. I mean, people were praising the operational security of this whole bombing affair, meaning nothing leaked. Things always leak. All the time things leak. Everyone knows ahead of time. It's all over social media. But we had this.
This is an operation in the last 18 years since I've been at the Pentagon. I've never seen such operational security. There was nobody speaking about this.
Great. That's good news. I think OPSEC is operational security. OPSEC is a good thing, don't you? Good. Okay. Why? How did that happen? Is it just better leadership? Pete Hegseth, Donald Trump running things the right way? Well, that's part of it. But Ronny Jackson went on the news, and this is what he said.
Could have hollered at us. really key that we had operational security in order to pull this off. We've been talking about that. That was key in what happened. And you made the comment earlier about, you know, notifying Congress beforehand. That cannot happen in this situation. We do not have trustworthy people in Congress, especially on the left side of the aisle. If you tell Crockett and Tlaib and Omar and Presley and even Thomas Massie and people in our party like this at this particular point, you might as well put the Ayatollah on the phone as well. We
had operational security because we didn't tell Democrats. Caroline Leavitt attempted the best she could to massage that situation, but I think you and me, we can both read between the lines here.
We did make bipartisan calls. Thomas Massie and the Democrats, he should be a Democrat because he's more aligned with them than with the Republican Party. We're given notice. The White House made calls to congressional leadership. They were bipartisan calls. In fact, Hakeem Jeffries couldn't be reached. We tried him before the strike, and he didn't pick up the phone, but he was briefed after, as well as Chuck Schumer.
I love that part. Hey, we tried him. He didn't pick up the phone, but we briefed him afterwards. Hey, Hakeem, did you not answer? There must have been some shoddy cell phone service. Maybe you should have got Pure Talk. Okay, so we achieved operational security because we didn't tell Democrats. All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad we got operational security. I'm glad we figured out how to achieve operational security. You can't tell the communist subversives. All that stuff's good. Here's what's bad. Where does that leave us as a country? Think about that for a moment. No matter what the issue. And remember, just let's keep this in mind. The leaking of military plans kills people. You know the saying, you've heard it before, no matter how old you are, you've heard the saying, loose lips sink ships. That is true. When the word gets put out, when military plans are known ahead of time, people die. And that is why they're known by everyone. Small children know that. When military plans are put out ahead of time, people die. If we, the United States of America, if Donald Trump's White House had told Democrats about his plans, Democrats would have leaked it to the media. And possibly, we don't know, but possibly it would have resulted in the death of American troops. So let's just go ahead and cut out the middleman. If we had told Democrats beforehand, they would have tried to have American troops killed. I am thrilled we achieved operational security, but you want to know why I'm more focused on domestic things? We're in trouble here, right here at home, without any help from anywhere abroad. You can have and should have different political parties with different ideas and different visions for the country. All that stuff's fine. It's understandable. It creates debate. It creates competition. All that stuff is fine. How do you survive as a country when one political party hates the country and flat out hates the troops? By the way, loose lips sink ships. You know, let's rewind again for history. You know, being in a submarine in World War II was basically a death sentence. Look, the Germans lost 90% of their sub guys. Gone. Dead. America lost 50. American submarine service in World War II was so deadly, it was only volunteer. They wouldn't even assign people to do it. You had to volunteer. Yeah, I'll go get on that little death box. Okay. You want to know why we lost a bunch of guys one time? Because a congressman told a newspaper that the Japanese were setting their depth charges too shallow. He told this to the media. Of course, the media printed it. The Japanese read it, adjusted. American troops went to the bottom of the ocean. Sailors went to the bottom of the ocean. Loose lips sink ships. We have an entire political party so poisonously anti-America that we can't even inform them of war plans because we know they'll run right to the media. Where does that leave us? Tell you what, pause on that for a second. Let's focus on this and think about this a little bit, because a lot of people are concerned right now because Iran loves terrorism. They love sponsoring it and all these things. A lot of people are concerned that Iran may respond with some sort of a domestic terrorist attack. Let's think about this.
Customs and Border Protection sources tell Fox News nearly half of the Iranian nationals who crossed the border illegally during the Biden administration were released into the U.S. Border Patrol arrested 1,504 Iranian nationals at our southern border from fiscal year 2021 through 2024. 729 of them were released into the U.S. Iranians are considered special interest aliens due to national security concerns and are supposed to receive enhanced vetting by DHS. Now officials are worried about an Iranian threat to the homeland.
How many of those people who Joe Biden and the communists released into the country, how many of them were on the terrorist watch list? We don't know. The Biden administration would never tell anybody. Democrats are so evil. Modern Democrats are so inherently evil, so committed to bringing in as many foreigners as they possibly can the second they achieve power, that Iran, if they choose to do so, might be able to wound us in horrible, horrible ways. Not mortal ways, I'm not saying that, but a bomb at a school, a plane flying into a tower, as we've seen before. What does it look like? I don't know. But all this was brought to you by the Democrat Party. Where does that leave us? Now do you understand why I am a little bit more focused on domestic things? I'm much more concerned about the FBI than I am anything else, going on in the world. The Democrat Party, half the country, treasonous, evil. Oh, speaking of which, I know you may not care unless you're in New York City or love New York City, but this will apply to everybody. Did you hear what the current leading candidate to be mayor of New York City, did you hear what he said? Talk about that in a moment. You might want to pick up a Byrna compact launcher, by the way. I'm talking a Byrna compact launcher that's the size of a smartphone that will stop a bad person from hurting you, because Democrats in this country, no matter where you live, are committed to bringing in as many bad people as possible. Our domestic bad people, they want them let out of prison. They want them let off scot-free when it comes to trial. And that is why violent crime in this country is through the roof. That is why every day you wake up to some new horrific video or news story about some monster hurting people. What if that monster stops your daughter in a parking lot tonight? How will she stop him? Is she going to scream? Try to call the cops? What if tonight at 2 a.m. your window breaks and that monster's crawling into your living room? How will you stop him? Bob, but Jesse, I don't like guns. Byrna isn't a gun. It shoots tear gas balls or kinetic rounds, these hard plastic balls, 400 feet per second. It's not even a gun. That's why it's legal in all 50 states. I'm in New York. Fine, buy one. It's an American company, by the way. Legal in all 50 states without a permit, without a background check. Stop hoping for the best. Get a couple Byrna launchers, your car, your nightstand, your daughter. BYRNA. Go to Byrna.com. They have a retail store locator. You can go try one. Byrna.com. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, wonderful Monday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. So I'm going to play something. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But I was just talking about Democrats, treasonous subversives they are now, and how insane they are, completely ideologically captured now. They've run all the sane voices out. And as a result, it's now just about putting everything to the torch. What I'm about to play you is not edited, okay? You may or may not care about New York City. Full disclosure for you new listeners. While I understand I grew up in Montana and Ohio, I love New York City. I always have to go up there for work or something. I just adore the place. I always have. It's fun. It's wild. I like cities. I have a good time there. So I love New York City. This guy, Zohran Mamdani, who hasn't even been an American citizen for that long, he is, according to today's polls, the leading candidate in New York City. Now, I want you to remember, who's been telling you that your blue area no longer has any more guardrails? Now that all sanity has been run out of the Democrat Party, there are no more guardrails where there used to be. Where if you were in a city, New York City, and some Democrat city councilman proposed something bonkers, like, hey, let's just turn the subway into a homeless shelter. Even other Democrats would have been all, hey, come on. Slow down here. All right, I get it, we're on the left, but that's too far. That's insane. Those guys are gone. They have all been run out of the party. There are no more guardrails. There are no more breaks. If you are in a blue-controlled area, the brake lines have been cut. It's all gas, no brakes. There's no more. I have been warning you that if you can, a lot of people can't, but if you can, you need to get out. Pack up and leave. Move your family somewhere else, because the blue areas of this country are now in a death spiral, and I don't know if they can pull themselves out. Now, that sounds like a lot. That's hyperbole, surely. Okay. Allow me to play you the leading candidate to take over as mayor of America's most important city, and you can argue the most important city on planet Earth.
What we need to do is give support and funding to institutions that are trained to deal with these kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. As you said, if you're having an argument with someone and there's a risk of it escalating, who is better positioned to de-escalate it? Someone who is well-known in the community, or someone who has been trained specifically in de-escalation, mm-hmm. or a stranger who has a gun? And we see so many situations where encounters with police, the police arrive, and all of a sudden the tension rises even astronomically to mm-hmm. what it was prior. You know, look at how policing is done in the suburbs, mm-hmm. in wealthier, whiter America. When people make mistakes, the answer is not to throw them in jail.
No.
The answer is not to, you know, put them in a cage and throw away the key. The answer is to try and find a non-carceral solution.
You know, absolutely.
Community service, something where, you know, they learn from their mistakes, there's a mm-hmm. sense of accountability and growth, all these kinds of things, which for many people in this country, especially mm-hmm. black people, are not offered the same opportunity.
He is proposing taking the cops out of the high crime New York areas, filling up the subway with homeless people. He has proposed, not making this up, government-run supermarkets. He's an open, naked Marxist. Doesn't really hide that fact at all. And he is not some kooky wingnut who's currently polling at 1%. The betting markets have him winning. I don't know whether he will win or not in the end, but the betting markets have him winning. So, a couple things. If you are in one of these areas, it's not just New York City, get out. I know it can be hard. It can be impossible. Maybe it is impossible. Maybe you can't. Maybe you're taking care of your mom. You can't leave your job. I get it. If you can, there are no more guardrails where you're at. Get out. That's one. Two, I am very mixed emotionally about this, and I'm mixed for this reason. I love New York City, as I said. I like to take my wife up there. When I have to go up for work, Ab and I go up. We have a blast. Go eat. Have fun. Statue of Liberty. I don't want to watch New York City burn. It's already gotten dirty enough, bad enough, smelly enough, homeless, crime. It's been noticeably on the downswing since Bloomberg left, to be honest with you. It's been down, 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 down. This is the kind of thing that can just finish you. Business leaders in New York City are already saying, oh my gosh, please not this guy, please not this guy. So I'm scared of it. And no matter what, maybe you're a New York City hater or a city hater, and I get that. It's easy to point and say, oh, you stupid idiot Democrats, but cities matter too. Rural America matters. Cities matter. Every part of the country matters. It matters to me. I don't want to watch one of our great cities burn. One of the cities I love burn. But I said I was mixed emotionally, and here's why. I am also my father's son. And my father had a policy very similar to one that I have with my boys. I will give you my wisdom. I will give you my guidance. And if you ignore it and hurt yourself, I don't feel bad for you. If I tell you not to touch the stove, you decide you're going to be a rebellious little snot and touch the stove, don't come to me with your burn. I don't care. I told you what to do. Own your stupidity. I realize the Democrat Party has been completely captured by insane monsters now. But if New Yorkers go to the polls and choose this guy to run their city, then you get what you get. Don't throw a fit. You get what you voted for. Or the abridged version is you voted for this. Those four lovely words. Don't do it, New York. Don't make that mistake. Or you get what you get. Don't throw a fit. Let's make fun of crying Democrats and do some emails. Next.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.